I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Earl Ingram.
Mayor Johnson, we used to have a saying called a switcheroo. Talking about one thing while behind the scenes, there's a greater issue.
This man was elected president of the United States to focus in on making everyday life more affordable. But our push to remove lead service lines, our health department, are impacted by the things that the Trump administration have targeted since they've been in office. Yeah, it's been a huge switcheroo. It's not been about saving folks money. I mean, this is going to cause more pain.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Hey folks, this is Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. We have all stopped at a convenience store for a necessity or two. A bottle of water, a half a gallon of milk, or a bag of pickle-flavored potato chips. I mean, those are necessities in your house too, right? But there is a cost for that kind of convenience, as much as 54% more. Now, when I was in my early 20s, like some of you, I may have done most of my shopping at the 7-Eleven around the corner from my apartment. And boy, oh boy, I wish I had known that shopping regularly at convenience stores instead of supermarkets meant I was paying a lot more for my groceries. A National Institute of Health survey recently found that milk can cost 11 to 14% more at those stores. Apples and bananas, 10 to 53% more. And cereal can cost as much as 54% more. So, for your regular food shopping, keep more money in your wallet and head on over to the supermarket. For more tips on saving, text MONEY to 88285. This is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. La Crosse is encouraging residents to build tiny homes to help solve the housing shortage. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
After the city was awarded nearly $20,000 last year through AARP Wisconsin's Community Challenge, it asked residents to submit ADU designs to show the community what's possible in their own backyards. La Crosse Environmental and Sustainability Planner Lewis Coleman says the secondary housing units can be attached to or separate from the main house.
The top three ADU designs that we picked were based on affordability, accessibility, and sustainability. So we wanted to make sure that these were residences that were in reach from a cost perspective.
The three finalists were selected from 26 submissions and were each awarded $3,000. Coleman says what's left of the grant money will potentially be used to make the winning concepts into ready-to-build plans. In addition to seeing ADUs as a way to increase homes, Coleman says they can offer financial support for homeowners who rent them out. They can also provide multi-generational housing for parents of children with disabilities or children who want to live near their aging parents. However, Coleman adds there are some downfalls, especially in light of rising construction costs.
In some cases, it could cost as much as a full-size house, so that's still a challenge. And one of the things we're looking at is working with our local lenders to put together financial packages that could make it easier for homeowners to add this to their backyard.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Winter weather advisories continue with flurries and snow showers and an inch or two of accumulation with a high in the low 30s. Still some flurries and snow showers tonight, low in the mid-teens. Gradually clearing for tomorrow, but colder, high near 20. Currently 21 degrees.
Let's rock some local music this weekend on Max Inc. Join us as we welcome Kaylin Cole and Lexi Liu, plus Yanni and Rocker will stop in for a visit. It's Max Inc. Saturday to Sunday evenings at 6 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the Center, WRCE. Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus Law Review, and yes, my name is Jim Santel. I'm your host on this broadcast. This weekend, our weekly review of all things government, rule of law, and aspiration for justice related. Thank you so much for joining me here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. This weekend, I am coming to you live Saturday and repeated on Sunday, live right now, just in the wake of the recent events in Washington, D.C., which we're going to spend a lot of time talking about today, specifically the Department of Justice, but also coming to you from another capital, that is our state capital here in Madison, just in the shadow of our wonderful dome here right off of State Street in the studios of Civic Media. My terrific producer, Max, is in Racine and handling all of the administrative and technological aspects of our program. And because of that, Max and I are once again able to take your phone calls, your questions, your inquiries. That number is 855-752-4842. One more time, that's 855-752-4842. You can be a part of our discussion here on Amicus, a Law Review, bringing in your questions and your inquiries, your observations and your comments. I suspect, as always, there will be a lot of them in this weekend broadcast. Once again, appreciate your time, your devotion of your interest and resources to our conversation this weekend when a lot of things are on our agenda. Let me tell you a little bit about what is on our syllabus for this, our weekend show, beginning with what has turned into the second component, the second portion of our version of all things DOJ, all things the Department of Justice. You may recall that last week in our broadcast, we began to talk about some of the major changes that are being made under our newly invested Attorney General, her name Pamela Bondi, and also someone who is at the Department of Justice running the show, running the operation from virtually the time that Donald Trump took office. His name is Emile Beauvais. We're going to be hearing a lot about him today, this weekend, and we'll be talking a lot about him, I suspect, in the days and weeks, months, maybe even years ahead, because he has been making a lot of news just this past week, as has Pam Bondi. And so we're going to be continuing what we started last weekend, which is all things DOJ, major news items coming out of Main Justice. It's there at 9th Street and Constitution Avenue, right there in between the White House and the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. Yes, necessarily, we're going to be talking about Eric Adams, the mayor of New York, and this major story that has continued legs from several weeks ago when we first began to report on this notion that maybe, just maybe, there were some discussions underway between the Department of Justice and Eric Adams about dismissing that major federal prosecution, a criminal prosecution brought against him by a grand jury in New York. Well, it turns out that there's not a complete resolution of that, but certainly a lot of movement in that case. We're going to spend a lot of time talking in our first hour about Eric Adams, the charge charges against him remind you of those? We'll talk about exactly what's been going on between the White House and the Department of Justice. Yes, Emile Beauvais, who is the acting deputy attorney general, the number two in control, in command of the Department of Justice, directing just this past week, the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. She's a U.S. attorney there appointed on an interim basis by this president to serve until a Senate-confirmed U.S. attorney takes that position. She decided this past week not to follow the directives of her superiors in Washington, D.C., in particular, wrote a letter, which we're going to spend a lot of time talking about and, frankly, even providing you with specific information about the content of that letter. It is both chilling and it's also a fantastic articulation of all things civic, of what the rule of law is supposed to be and what prosecutors should and should not be all about. She is schooling her boss, Emile Beauvais, the acting deputy attorney general. She's arguably schooling the attorney general herself. The attorney general now in office for about 10 days or so. We'll talk about that and the resignations. The resignations now up to seven major top prosecutors in New York, in Washington, D.C. We'll talk about the reasons for their decisions to abandon, to leave the Department of Justice rather than doing the things that they've been directed to do, these things that they feel rightly are contrary to the basic operational structure, the basic missions, the purposes of the Department of Justice. We'll tell you more about all of those. And then we'll talk about what's going to happen next, which is the petition, which, yes, indeed, finally was signed. Late Friday, we'll tell you about who actually affixed their name to that pleading, how that happened, and what the message is even there at the time of the filing of this motion to dismiss the criminal prosecution against Eric Adams, and then what a federal district court judge is going to be doing in the future. Lots of things to unpack in connection with that major story coming out of the Department of Justice, which once again, regrettably gives us another opportunity to talk about civics in America and schooling all of us on what should and should be the United States Department of Justice just these first days, these first weeks of the Trump administration. A few other things also on our agenda this weekend. We're going to talk about other matters coming out of the Department of Justice, some other dismissals that have sort of flown under the radar. Those two remaining defendants in that Mar-a-Lago documents case, you may recall that they were also charged along with the now president, at that time former president, with violating all sorts of rules with respect to documents, national security matters, classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. Those two remaining co-conspirators when it comes to obstruction of justice and the charges against them for doing just that in connection with that prosecution. Those two have been dismissed. We'll talk about that, give you some information about what that means, why that's important as well. And then we're also going to talk about another piece of litigation, not criminal in nature, but announced by the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, just this past week. She has decided, she has announced that she is suing both the governor of New York State and also the Attorney General of the United States, of New York, coming out of the Department of Justice. What's the basis for that? Premised upon the allegation that they have failed to provide support and assistance and engagement on immigration issues there in New York. We'll talk about what Pam Bondi announced from the Department of Justice across state lines into New York just this past week as well. And finally, sort of a footnote to all of that, and not a specific federal case, but one that comes in the wake of a federal case. It was previously dismissed, previously gotten rid of. This one involves Steve Bannon, the former senior advisor to the current president. You may recall that he was initially charged by the federal government, by the United States Department of Justice, for violations of federal law when it comes to fraud and corruption in relation to his Build the Wall campaign. And although the trial there was going ahead, was going to be conducted by a federal district court judge, Donald Trump pardoned the defendant there, Steve Bannon, and resulted basically in the dismissal of that case. Well, it turns out that the state of New York and Alvin Bragg, the DA there in Manhattan, decided to pick up that prosecution, charged Steve Bannon with the same kinds of things, but under state law in violation of New York law. And we'll talk about the dismissal of that case, the resolution of that case, basically, upon the plea of guilty by Steve Bannon and what the judge did, the resolution of that case in New York, coming out once again of a state court, but in the wake of a federal prosecution. Necessarily a major portion of our continuing focus on all things DOJ is going to be on the major policy changes, practices, and memorandums issued by the Attorney General in the brief 10-day period since she has been our chief federal law enforcement officer. She has issued something approaching 20 different memorandums, some of them fairly routine but important, others of them changing dramatically the ways in which the United States Department of Justice, the ways in which United States attorneys, 92, 93 of them around the country, are going to be prosecuting cases on your behalf in the coming years. We'll talk about those policies, and specifically at the outset, which leads us back into Eric Adams, we're going to talk about this major change adopted by the White House and, yes, indeed, by this Department of Justice. It says that arm's length relationship that we have talked about so much on this broadcast, so much of that is no longer in place. And what that means is that now a huge amount of communication going on between the White House and Maine Justice about what? About specific cases that are pending, including, plainly, the Eric Adams matter. All of that, as a part of our continuing focus on the policies, the practices, the things that Pam Bondi is already doing to change the Department of Justice. She's got some major issues on her hand right now when it comes to dealing with this Eric Adams matter. But the reality is that all of these things are going to be affecting all of us, because the Department of Justice, again, subject to the directions and the instructions of the Attorney General, of the Deputy Attorney General, who is responsible for the day-to-day operations of the agency, all of that has a direct impact upon the United States Department of Justice, and once again, U.S. attorneys in every state in the union, including right here in Wisconsin, including in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and also in the Western District of Wisconsin. We plainly will also be looking in future broadcasts to that process as well. As you know, as we have discussed, the process for putting new United States attorneys in place is a political one. It shouldn't be, because the office is not political, shouldn't be at least apartisan. But nonetheless, because of the way that history has played out here in America, it is a position, all these positions, subject to nomination by the president and then confirmation, advice and consent by the United States Senate. And so soon, the president is going to be nominating two individuals, presumably two lawyers, to serve as the chief federal law enforcement officers right here in Madison, where I'm broadcasting from this weekend, and also in Milwaukee, my home base, and all other U.S. attorneys' offices from around the country. That's coming up, and we'll take a look at the process by which that happens, involving traditionally and presumably again this time with our two senators, our senior senator, our junior senator. You know their names, Ron Johnson, obviously at the top of that list as well. He has a lot to say when it comes to making those decisions. The other one, of course, is Tammy Baldwin, our junior senator. And together, they make a recommendation to the White House about those nominations. All of this following our further discussion here on Amicus, a Law Review.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Hey, it's me time at Chula Vista. Time for you to pamper yourself. Wisconsin's most complete resort experience has everything you want. Fine-tuned for 70 years by four generations of the Kaminsky family, Chula Vista can be easygoing with colorful scenic river walks, 18 holes of classic golf, a relaxing spa, or you can go all out in 80,000 square feet of indoor water park.
zip lining through canyon views in Chula's Aerial Adventure Park. And dining comes any way you like it, from pizza to Wisconsin's number one ranked steakhouse. More than 600 guest rooms to choose from, with $10 million in updates. Chula Vista, everything you've been wanting, all right here on site. Check it out at ChulaVistaResort.com.
USA Today's Reader's Choice Awards named Chula Vista one of America's top 10 indoor water parks. Find out why at ChulaVistaResort.com.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
My name is Jim Santel, and this is Amicus, a law review. We are coming to you today from the studios here in Madison, Wisconsin, but broadcasting throughout the stations, throughout Wisconsin and in other places, always taking your phone calls, your inquiries, your comments at 855-752-4842. And beginning, of course, our discussion in this, our weekend broadcast, with this major story coming out of both New York City and also Washington, D.C., focusing upon the present, the current, the continuing mayor. His name is Eric Adams, as you know well. He is facing election in the months just ahead, which also animates in major ways what should be a non-political story, but nonetheless has become very partisan-related, very politically animated by all of the things going on in New York and in Washington, D.C. as well. Let's go back and provide you with a little bit of background about how we got to this spot and then give you some sense about what's going to happen in the future. You may recall that way back in late January, just a few weeks ago, we did some initial reporting on this right here on this broadcast, indicating that the Justice Department at that time, some reporting was said to be discussing dropping the case against Eric Adams, that case which I'll tell you more about in just a few moments. Recent weeks at that time, Eric Adams, who was known to be a Democrat, had curried a fair amount of favor with Donald Trump. He met with the president-elect at that time, even before these reports surfaced at Mar-a-Lago. He's done that since then. He attended the inauguration on January 20th and said that from that time forward, he would stop criticizing this president for immigration policies and anything else, basically establishing a close relationship with this president in the wake and even prior to his swearing in as our president. Well, what had happened even before that time? We recall well that a federal investigation animated, preceded by an awful lot of preparation by the FBI, but executed, if you will, by the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office in Southern District of New York. That's basically Manhattan. That's the location of the Department of Justice there, prosecutors in all sorts of areas, including public corruption right there in Manhattan. The office's investigation, again, along with the FBI, into the mayor began actually in the middle of 2021. And the conduct described in the indictment that eventually came out from a grand jury, once again, 23 people brought together there in Manhattan to decide whether there's probable cause to believe that a crime had been committed. The indictment that ultimately was issued by a grand jury followed that investigation of the FBI, of the United States Attorney's Office, reaches back, interestingly, to a time when Adams was serving as the borough president for Brooklyn there prior to his time as the mayor, but also focused upon things related to his conduct as the mayor there in New York. In particular, the grand jury in that indictment, a federal indictment pending in federal court until late this past week, accused the mayor of accepting more than $100,000 in flight upgrades and some airline tickets. Also accused him of pressuring the New York Fire Department to speed up, to move forward more quickly, its approval of a new Turkish consulate. That was a key aspect of the charges against him. And also receiving some foreign contributions from wealthy foreigners who are not legally permitted under our federal laws from making campaign contributions to his campaign for the mayor. And by soliciting those illegal donations, according to the indictment, Adams fraudulently obtained millions of dollars in public matching funds for his campaign. All of that set forth by the prosecutors, by the grand jury. The mayor pleaded not guilty, We always hasten to add on this broadcast and others that any defendant prior to the return of a verdict by a trial jury, a Pettit jury, is assumed innocent. Assumed innocent under our system of laws. And just weeks ago, prosecutors had said that they had uncovered some additional criminal conduct by Adams involving some obstruction of justice. We'll get back to that. Note that right now. But that's where things were. And obviously the case moving toward trial fairly soon, a little bit later in a couple of months here in this calendar year, Eric Adams, the mayor of New York, going on trial there in a federal court in the Southern District of New York in Manhattan for these charges returned by the grand jury. And again, that's when we got this reporting coming out of some sources in Washington, D.C., that maybe, just maybe, there was some tendrils, some outreach by the Department of Justice. We don't know if it was from the U.S. Attorney's Office or the or Maine Justice at the time. Clear now it was from Maine Justice, inquiring about whether there could be a resolution somehow of this case, maybe dropping the case entirely against Eric Adams. We commented at that time about the impropriety of that, and that somehow this might be a quid pro quo. Again, words that are used even in recent days to describe what did in fact happen here. Not only in the wake of the mayor's currying this favor, these increased relationships, committing to stop criticizing the president for immigration policies, even supporting the president when it comes to meeting with the border czar. Very recently, we know as well that Eric Adams had opened Rikers to ICE agents, announcing that he would issue an executive order to allow federal immigration authorities into the Rikers Island jail complex. That was a significant major shift in the city's sanctuary policies for immigration issues. The mayor of the city would also move to allow the Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents into the jail to assist in those criminal investigations, in particular, those focused on violent criminals and gangs. That's what the mayor had also said as a part of his increasing relationship with the president, and in particular, with the president's border czar. You may recall his name, Thomas Homan, H-O-M-A-N. All of that also seen on television recently as a result of this warming up of the relationship between the mayor and the president, specifically on immigration issues, but suggesting along the way that all of this was heading toward another result. And sure enough, what just happened this past week is this. Emile Beauvais, again, he's serving in an acting capacity right now. Eventually, for what it's worth, he is going to be something called the Principal Associate Deputy Attorney General. He's going to be second in command, kind of operating behind the scenes for a fellow named Todd Blanche, whose name you've also seen. You've also seen him as well. Both Blanche and Beauvais, you may recall their images. You may recall their voices, things coming out of that Manhattan courtroom a number of weeks and, frankly, most of last year, having to do with the charges against the now president, 34 counts of violations of New York law for having engaged in fraud, connection with those silent or not so silent payments to Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet about the affair in advance of the 2016 election. That's a lot, I know. That prosecution, which Emile Beauvais and Todd Blanche represented when they were in private practice, represented the now former, now president, formerly at that time a private citizen. They represented him in that case. And so you may recall seeing him sitting at counsel table near Blanche, near the president, right between the two of them. Emile Beauvais, since that time, becoming this important person inside the Department of Justice. And yes, just this past week, in the wake of all of that, apparently in the wake of lots of communications with Eric Adams, directing the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. This is the big news story of this past week, telling her she's got to dismiss this case and get rid of it. We decided to get rid of the case, making the request to do that without prejudice. We'll talk more about what that means, and we'll talk about the consequences of what Emile Beauvais, right now the acting deputy attorney general, what are the consequences of that? Some major things going on inside the department in Manhattan at Maine Justice, all of those affecting the rule of law in America, all of that coming up here on Amicus, a law review.
News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The Trump administration and its Department of Government Efficiency have begun sweeping job cuts across numerous federal departments and agencies, says ABC's Selena Wang.
We know that in this first round of layoffs, they're targeting people who were hired by the federal government within the last 1 to 2 years. So this could potentially impact more than 200,000 people. Folks in key roles, for instance, in the Department of Health, Energy, and Homeland Security. And we're also told that they're looking at the military next.
On social media, President Trump said the U.S. stands behind whatever decision Israel makes. He previously suggested that Israel end its ceasefire with Hamas if all hostages were not released by noon. Three hostages were released today. Two Israeli sources tell ABC Secretary of State Marco Rubio will arrive in Israel tonight. Right now, he's at the Munich Security Conference a day after Vice President Vance turned heads with a speech critical of European allies. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Brandon Woodruff back on the mound. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. At Brewers spring training in Arizona, pitcher Brandon Woodruff throwing 20 pitches for the first time to batters after having surgery on his shoulder back in October of 2023. How did it feel?
Felt great. When you can kind of break down, obviously I was nervous, jittery. It's the first time in a year and a half, but I felt good. I think it went a lot better than I expected to, which was I needed this. I needed to face hitters. I needed Bowers, and I needed William to step in the box. You know what I mean? Like, you got a all-star steps in the box, the first hitter you've seen in a year and a half. I mean, you can't help but get a little adrenaline going. So it was good for me. Got some good feedback, and now it's just recover. Like, go recover and get used to doing this again.
NBA All-Star Weekend, the Bucks' Marcus Johnson named a finalist for the Basketball Hall of Fame. The final vote to be announced in April. Bucks head coach Doc Rivers did not make the cut. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
No more mold. No more damage. No more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Winter weather advisories continue with flurries and snow showers and an inch or two of accumulation with a high in the low 30s. Still some flurries and snow showers tonight, low in the mid-teens. Gradually clearing for tomorrow, but colder, high near 20.
Currently 21 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While attacks on democracy norms ensue in Washington, state legislatures have also been busy. We have updates from Utah, Kansas, Indiana, and the contested North Carolina Supreme Court race. Voting Rights Lab reports that the Utah House is considering HB 300, which forces mail-in ballot users to deliver their ballot not by mail, but by hand to an official polling place where an ID can be presented. The elderly, disabled, and other voters for whom returning by mail is their only option would need to seek special permission. HB 332 would withdraw Utah from the Cooperative Electronic Registration Data Center, the subject of far-right conspiracy theories. The Kansas Senate passed SB 4, which requires receipt of mail-in ballots by 7 p.m. Election Day to count, rather than the current 3 days after. An Indiana Senate committee advanced SB 284, shortening early in-person voting from 28 days to 14 days, ending at noon the day before Election Day. The full Senate passed SB 10, ending use of school-issued student identification as ID for voting. In North Carolina, a district court judge dismissed a claim by a state Supreme Court candidate that in a race he lost by 734 votes, as many as 65,000 voters were ineligible. A federal appeals court may revisit it. We've linked the Voting Rights Lab tracker at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Marquette University professor and pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin.
Deporting immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally. 60% support that. But when we ask the same question and just add at the end, including those with jobs and no criminal record, then support drops to just 43%.
Wisconsinites have a sense of fairness.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Earl Ingram.
We'll be driving to a significant moment in American history with a special Black History lesson featuring guest historian Professor Bob Harvey. Later in the show, we'll also welcome Reggie Jackson.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel, along with my terrific producer, Max. We are taking your phone calls, your inquiries, your questions, as always here on our weekend broadcast. That number is 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Max will be administering those phone calls as they come in. Be a part of our discussion this weekend about this major story coming out of Maine Justice, coming out of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, coming out of the Justice Department generally across our nation, affecting everyone, not just the mayor, not just people of Manhattan, not just those folks who spend a lot of their time inside those government offices in Manhattan and in Washington, D.C., but I'd argue you as well, because of the civics lessons, the lessons about what the Department of Justice should and should not be doing in any administration, including this one. Brought you up to speed in terms of the background until just this past week. Eric Adams, the mayor, again charged by this grand jury indictment of major fraud. Presumed innocent until he's proven guilty, if at all, heading to trial fairly soon. And along the way, engaging in an awful lot of relationships with the current president, visiting him at Mar-a-Lago, being a part of the inauguration, having some discussions, obviously, with the present czar, the immigration czar, about ways in which the mayor can further facilitate the policies of New York City, which is a sanctuary city when it comes to immigration issues. All of that prompting an awful lot of skepticism. The skepticism comes true this past week when the acting deputy attorney general, again, his name is Emile Beauvais, a name you should know about. He's going to be a major player for the next 4 years inside the Department of Justice, even as eventually he assumes his permanent role as the principal associate deputy attorney general under Todd Blanche. That's a lot of inside baseball. But the reality is that right now he's calling a lot of the shots inside Maine Justice, and he directs the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York to dismiss the criminal prosecution against Eric Adams. He does that just this past week. He says along the way that his decision to do this is because the mayor's indictment has limited Adams' ability to cooperate in President Trump's immigration crackdown. Again, that should be your first concern there, that somehow the policies related to immigration are being impacted by the pendency of a criminal investigation and a criminal prosecution unrelated to that. Beauvais also suggested the indictment, which was handed down way back in September, threatened to interfere, get this, with the June 2025 mayoral primary coming up in just a few months here, despite the nine-month interval between those two events. The decision, again, to go ahead and seek the dismissal, telling his underlings, including the U.S. attorney there in Manhattan, to dismiss this case. The allegation, of course, that there was not a basis for going ahead with the prosecution, just the opposite. The statements by Emile Beauvais at the time that he directed the dismissal of this case affirmed the legitimacy of the prosecution, said the case was strong. There was no reason to believe that it was not valid or that somehow the grand jury had gone away. Beauvais explicitly saying the Justice Department made its decision without assessing the strength of the evidence, which was considerable, or the legal theories undergirding the case. None of that suspect, but instead criticizing the U.S. attorney who brought the case under the Biden administration, and also Joe Biden himself, expressly indicating this was all politically motivated, and it was because somehow, maybe, the mayor was not cooperating with the administration, an awful lot of political things that, again, have no place inside the decision to prosecute or not prosecute, to go ahead or not go ahead with a criminal prosecution for soliciting illegal foreign campaign contributions, conspiracy, wire fraud, bribery, all those other things for which there is substantial evidence to try. All of that happens, and indeed then the directive, the letter from Emile Beauvais arrives on the desk of the United States attorney. She is in an acting capacity. What happens, of course, during these periods of time before a formal nomination of a so-called permanent U.S. attorney is made, it's not unusual for the administration to put in place an interim or acting United States attorney. I served in that capacity for 1 year between administrations a number of years ago. And her name is Danielle Sassoon, S-A-S-S-O-O-N. She's the acting, but actually the United States attorney. Don't even have to say acting. She's got all of the responsibilities of that role. And she receives this letter telling her from Emile Vauvé, her boss, the deputy attorney general, the acting deputy attorney general, telling her that in the case of United States versus Eric Adams, the case number is 24CR556. That's the official docket number by the court. You've got to dismiss that case. Dismiss that case. But, oh, by the way, you can do that without prejudice. We'll talk about the reason why that is so significant and why that language actually is prompting people to raise even more concerns about the present status of the mayor there and calling upon him to resign. Plainly, those calls already out there based upon the indictment pending. But now this even heightening concerns about whether or not he can be true and honest in serving the people of New York when a lawsuit is going to be dismissed, but not with, with prejudice. The possibility of it bringing back under a new set of circumstances, we'll talk more about that in just a few moments. The letter from Emile Vauvé lands on Danielle Sassoon's desk, and she looks at it, and she plainly has consultations internal to her own office with the people who are surrounding her, including her criminal division chief, people from the public integrity section, inside the office there, and probably inside the public integrity section of Maine Justice as well. They're located in Washington, D.C. Also very usual for a U.S. attorney's office, even the Southern District of New York, which has this great deal of autonomy, has this reputation for being almost its own Department of Justice, also connected very much back to the public integrity section, a unit of Maine Justice where there are attorneys who work on these kinds of public corruption cases, plainly supported, worked on the investigation, worked on the prosecution itself. She reaches out and she says, I've got this directive from my boss to dismiss this case after all of this investigation, after all of this pretrial work. What should we do? Maybe she doesn't even have to ask the question. She decides fairly early on she can't do this. And so what does she do? She writes an eight-page letter to Emile Vauvé. And it is on the U.S. Department of Justice letterhead. It's coming from the Jacob Javits Federal Building, which is where the U.S. Attorney's Office is, at 26 Federal Plaza, the 37th floor right there in New York. She writes back and she says no. She says to him, you know, I have received this letter, and I've decided not to go ahead and dismiss this case. In particular, she writes back not to Emile Vauvé. She writes back to her boss. She writes back to the Attorney General, Pamela Bondi, the Attorney General of the United States, and she says, on February 10th, I received this memorandum from Deputy Attorney General Emile Vauvé directing me to dismiss the indictment against Eric Adams without prejudice, keep that in mind, subject to certain conditions which would require leave of court. Keep that in mind as well when we talk about what the judge here is now obliged to do. She says, I don't repeat here the evidence against Adams that proves beyond a reasonable doubt that he committed federal crimes. That's her way of saying the second sentence of this letter, that, hey, there's no reason to believe that this cannot result in a criminal conviction of him beyond a reasonable doubt. This case is strong. Mr. Vauvé rightly has never called into question, she says, that the case team conducted this investigation with integrity. Nothing about the way this was conducted, nor has he said that the charges against Adams are anything other than serious and supported by the facts and the law. Mr. Beauvais' directive to me, she says, directing me to dismiss this indictment based on a duly constituted act of the grand jury, has nothing to do with the strength of the case. It raises concerns, she says, that render the contemplated dismissal inconsistent, she says, with my ability and duty to prosecute federal crimes without fear or favor and to advance good faith arguments before the courts. That's really her first paragraph. Goes on for eight pages. I'd like to provide you with some specific information, some specific recitations about some of the key things she says in the following paragraphs in that letter. It is a very important piece of legal writing. It's a very important piece now in the history of our nation, because not only does it set forth, as I've said, these basic standards by which the Department of Justice is obliged to work, but also reestablishes, again, the principled decision by good people of all parties inside the Department of Justice. We shouldn't care. We don't care what your partisan views are privately. They're not animated by that. And she affirms that basically in this letter, both implicitly and explicitly, in saying politics should have nothing to do with this. My politics have nothing to do with this, she says. What is animating all of us is the law and the facts of this case. She says the reasons advanced by Mr. Bovee for dismissing the indictment are not ones I can good faith, she says, Madam Attorney General, defend as in the public interest and as consistent with the principles of impartiality and fairness that guide my decision making. Those are strong words coming from a United States attorney tutoring the Attorney General about how we're supposed to conduct ourselves. She says the legal judgments of the Department of Justice must be impartial, insulated from political influence. She cites some specific policies of this administration. She says, but Adams has argued in substance, and Mr. Bovee appears prepared to concede that Adams, the mayor, should receive leniency for federal crimes solely because, and here we go, because he occupies an important public position and can use that position to assist in the administration's policy priorities, completely inconsistent with the way these things should play out. She goes on to say, it is unclear why Adams would be better able to aid in immigration enforcement when the threat of future conviction is due to the possibility of reinstatement of the indictment followed by conviction at trial, rather than merely the possibility of conviction at trial. On this point, the possibility of trial before or after the election cannot be relevant. She's talking about the timing there, because Adams has selected the timing of his trial. Now, what does all that mean? How do we unpack that? Well, once again, the directive from Emile Bovee, curiously, interestingly, but again, consistent with this notion that we're going to have this hanging over the mayor and keep him in line when it comes to following the immigration policies and other law enforcement policies of this administration, is I'm directing you, he says to the U.S. attorney, to dismiss this without prejudice. What does that mean? And what is it that U.S. Attorney Sassoon is describing there? She's saying, well, we'll go in then, according to you, Mr. Bovee, dismiss this case for now. But if down the road circumstances change, the facts won't change, the strength of the case won't change. But if something else changes, we can bring this case back and we can reinitiate that because it's without prejudice. The prejudice would be, if it was with prejudice, it would be dismissed for all time. And we've seen some cases where that has happened, both in Democratic and Republican administrations, apolitically. Here, we want to dismiss this case so we can keep it hanging over the head of the mayor. And presumably the notion, as implicitly and explicitly said by the immigration czar on television just this past week, if he doesn't follow through on what he has said, doesn't comply with the terms and conditions, the policy directives on immigration and other things coming out of the White House, you know what? The threat with a capital T is still out there. We can reinitiate that. And along the way, that's going to keep you in line, Mr. Mayor. That's what the Department of Justice is saying to him. That's effectively what the Department of Justice, Emile Bovee, second in command right now of the Department of Justice, is telling a United States attorney about the reason why she has got to dismiss this case. And she says no. That's exactly what I just read from the letter. She says that's an improper reason for doing this. She talks beyond that about a strange sort of sideshow in all this, and that is a so-called about prisoner exchange, quid pro quo. She also says that equally insignificant here. She says it's difficult to imagine the department wishes to emulate an episode of the past involving a prisoner exchange by granting Adams leverage over it, akin to Russia's influence in international affairs. Again, talking about prisoner exchanges here, which again, a sideshow, but nonetheless, once again, underscoring the inappropriate international policies that somehow are directing what the Department of Justice does. As we continue here, we'll talk more about that curious quid pro quo, and then also talk about a significant footnote in this letter that the U.S. attorney drops that tells us a whole lot more about what's going on at Maine Justice these days, discussed here on Amicus, a law review.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Believe it or not, it is once again time for Wisconsinites to head to the polls and vote. I know, we all have a bit of election fatigue after 2024, but the spring election primary is coming up on Tuesday, February 18th. One race that will be on every ballot statewide for the spring primary is for state superintendent. Incumbent Jill Underley is seeking another term, and two candidates are challenging her. Jeff Wright, superintendent for Sauk Prairie Schools, and Brittany Kinzer, an education consultant and former charter school executive. Kinzer's candidacy, in particular, is gaining steam. Her campaign reported raising more than $500,000, far more than what Underley or Wright have brought in. With that type of financial support, this could prove to be a more competitive race for state superintendent than what we've seen in quite some time. This is becoming a real race to watch.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
My name is Jim Santel. This is Amicus Alarum. We're here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, talking all about the response by the United States Attorney, Southern District of New York, to Emile Beauvais, directing her to dismiss this indictment against the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, in language that could not be more clear. She says that with respect to the invocation by the deputy attorney general of a prisoner exchange involving a fellow named Bout, completely inaccurate, completely misleading, and she says it's particularly alarming, inappropriate to suggest that somehow the international decisions about a prisoner exchange should somehow animate what we're doing here in the criminal justice system. She criticizes him for even raising that and describes it as a quid pro quo, and she says that's exactly what's going on right now. And that also a part of her letter. Interestingly, she drops a footnote on page 3. She says, I attended a meeting on January 31st with Mr. Beauvais, Adams' counsel, that is his defense counsel, also rightly there, and members of my own office. She said, Adams' attorneys repeatedly urged what amounted to a quid pro quo, the very thing that Beauvais said was a part of this prisoner exchange and to which the U.S. attorney had taken great exception. She said he repeatedly made reference to that, indicating that Adams would be in a position to assist with the department's enforcement priorities only if the indictment was dismissed. Mr. Beauvais admonished a member of my team. She's talking about assistant U.S. attorneys, leaders in the U.S. attorney's office there in Manhattan. Beauvais admonished a member of my team who took notes during that meeting and directed the collection of those notes at the meeting's conclusion. Taking notes, gosh, there's an interesting idea for lawyers. We all take notes. Everyone takes notes, right, to memorialize what happens in meetings, especially meetings of this kind. Emile Beauvais did not want any sort of written recording of what happened. Well, the U.S. attorney basically does just that. She memorializes what happens at that meeting, this quid pro quo, and also suggests along the way that Emile Beauvais' actions, collecting the notes, somehow wanting to, what, keep or even destroy evidence of what he's proposing here, that's the conduct of a deputy attorney general. She also goes on to attack this allegation that somehow the timing of this is inappropriate. We've got the mayoral election, the process going ahead soon here, indicted way back in 2024. She said the timing of the charges in this case is also consistent with charging timelines of other cases involving elected officials, both in this district and other places. She says, I am not aware of any instance in which the department has concluded that no indictment brought this far in advance of an election is improper because it may be pending during an electoral cycle, let alone that a validly returned and factually supported indictment, there is that theme once again, should be dismissed on that basis. Timing, she says, has no relevance whatsoever. She talks about weaponization, something that the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, has also talked about recently in creating an anti-weaponization task force inside the Department of Justice. She goes on to say this: confidence in the department, this is the U.S. attorney, would be best restored by means well short of dismissal. As you know, our office is prepared to seek a superseding indictment from a new grand jury under my leadership. We have proposed a superseding indictment, a new set of charges that would add an obstruction conspiracy count based on evidence that Adams destroyed and instructed others to destroy evidence and provide false information to the FBI, and that would further factual allegations regarding his participation in a fraudulent straw donor scheme. All of that as a part of a larger discussion about this idea that somehow this is political in motivation, that there is even more evidence that Eric Adams has engaged in further criminal conduct, that this is not only not weaponization of the Department of Justice by the prior U.S. attorney, by this U.S. attorney, by the FBI. This is just the opposite. And she drops this bombshell. It's a big deal that there were even more charges coming, an additional new indictment charging him with even more. None of that now going to see the light of day. She goes on to say that seeking leave of court here to dismiss a properly returned indictment based on Emil Bovee's stated rationales, that is this quid pro quo for participation in immigration policies, is also likely to backfire by inviting skepticism and scrutiny, as well it should, from the court that will ultimately hinder the Department of Justice interests. In particular, the U.S. attorney says, the court is unlikely to acquiesce in using the criminal process to control the behavior of a political figure. Wow. Wow. Strong words. What's going on there? Well, again, we know that there's a judge. His name is Dale E. Ho. He was the trial judge before whom this case was going to be tried. He's handling all the pretrial matters, scheduling things on, anticipating the trial of this defendant, maybe even with those superseding obstruction charges being added on, which, again, we're not going to see the light of day. But Dale E. Ho is his name. He's the federal district court judge, and he is the one presiding over this case. He is the one who now, effectively, because of things that I'll tell you about in just a moment or so, he is the one who's now got to decide whether to grant this request of the United States Department of Justice to dismiss the case, to dismiss it, again, without prejudice, to dismiss it in such a way that it could come back at some point down the road if the deputy attorney general, if a new U.S. attorney, someone in the public integrity section, if the president decides that the cases, the charges should be reinitiated. The judge right now, Dale E. Ho, has before him the question of whether or not he should grant what's called leave of court. And yes, indeed, that's what United States Attorney Sassoon is talking about. He has got not a huge amount of responsibility, but some authority and some responsibility to decide whether or not this is in the interests of justice. He doesn't have to do it. And indeed, there have been some instances where judges have said no. Most often the appellate courts in our country, including right here in the Seventh Circuit, D.C., others have said, you know, you've got very little authority here. If the parties want to dismiss a case, if the government feels it's in the interest of justice to dismiss it, you probably should go ahead and do it. But still, there is some oversight responsibility here. And now Judge Ho is going to be determining whether or not, in the wake of all of this, he should indeed grant leave of court to do it, anticipate hearings coming up for all of that. And so that leads then receding back into the history of this. What happens? Well, not only does the U.S. attorney issue this letter, not only does she say that all of this is happening, she says, I'm baffled by the rushed and superficial process by which this decision was reached. Because of that, I'm asking to meet with you, Madam Attorney General. If you don't want to do that, I'm prepared to tender my resignation over this. It's that important, she says. And indeed, Emil Bovee writes back and says the resignation is accepted. In our second hour, we'll talk about what happened in the wake of that resignation, in the wake of what Emil Bovee has done, what's coming up for Judge Ho, what's coming up for the Justice Department and America here on Amicus, a law review.
News from the Center, WRCE. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, are you exhausted, tired, fed up? We get it, but we want you to get involved. Luann Bird is going to join us to talk about ways to keep going. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
Every story matters, and the Civic Media Radio Network is celebrating Black History Month by honoring the powerful stories of Wisconsin's own trailblazers.
Looking at the road that was laid before me,
from civil rights to business,
food and like food trucks is just like a cool atmosphere.
Science to music.
Speaking of which, this is where I spit. Express sentiment, a lot of cats on here.
I'm Terry Barr, inviting you to join us right here for inspiring stories all month long.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The website for Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency had promised to provide updates on savings achieved by Valentine's Day, which is now come and gone. The website's changed, saying the information will be out this weekend, but it's already clear widespread job cuts underway across the federal government. ABC's Mary Bruce has more.
The administration first targeting the roughly 200,000 federal employees who have been on the job less than a year. At the Department of Energy, at least 2,000 workers let go. More than 1,000 people fired from Veterans Affairs, and another 1,000 from the CDC.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio traveling from the Munich Security Conference to Israel, where today three more hostages were returned by Hamas.